Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast. My name is Taylor and today I'm joined by a guest who got into the running world pretty quickly. She ran her first marathon, her first ultra marathon, and paced her first marathon all in her first year of running. She's got a lot of really great stories from those experiences in this episode, so I think you're all going to really enjoy. Without further ado, let's jump right into it. Please welcome Amber. Amber, thank you so much for coming on today. Really excited to hear about your story. You've had quite the last year of running, I hear. But thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm very excited for this. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course, of course. All right, cool. Well, figured we could just kind of start from the beginning. How did you get into running in the first place?
Cool. So it's really vain, but I was trying to lose weight for my wedding. And yeah. I did a 5K, and then I got like really into it. I was like, well, that wasn't too bad. I can do a 10K. And then at the 10K race, I saw people were continuing the race instead of turning around. And I was like, what is this? And they said, it's a half marathon. I can do a half marathon. So then I trained for the half marathon. And then one thing I wanted to do before I turned 30, because I'm 30 now, was run a marathon. So I was like, let's go big or go home. I signed up for the Chicago Marathon. And since it was a year from then, I was like, okay, well, maybe it's a better idea to run a marathon prior to make sure I can do one ahead of time. So I signed up for the Irving Marathon. And that was my first marathon that happened last April of 2023.
Wow. Yeah. So you had a lot. That's cool that you kind of, you got into it with that original goal of, you know, losing weight. I feel like that's a pretty common experience for a lot of people, is that they're looking to maybe look a little bit better and then they get the bug and you kind of running kind of takes it from there.
I got very addicted. I've been running consistently for like 2 years already.
Yeah. It happens quick for sure. So from starting out training for your first 5K, what was the strategy? Were you following any sort of training plan, or you just kind of got out there and started running?
Oh, it was pretty bad. I didn't know anything about running. I would just do 3 miles on the treadmill consistently. And then I ended up injuring myself. I injured my ankle and I had to get like a nasty steroid injection. And then I found out, oh, you need actual running shoes. Or, oh my gosh, I wasn't drinking enough water on my runs. Yeah. And then I found something called the run walk method, which I actually used during my marathon that came in handy. And that's like you run for 5 minutes and then you walk for one. So after I recovered from my injury with the first 5K that I completely bonked, I went and did it like in 31 minutes from doing the run walk with running 5, walking 1. And then I was just like, okay, let's do a 10K, I'm ready.
Yeah, it is funny. The run walk strategy for a lot of people, you end up faster somehow. It's like, it's kind of counterintuitive to do it that way. But I know it's a really good strategy that a lot of people adopt. So you ran the 5K, you were like, all right, let's go for this thing, and went for the 10K. When did you decide to sign up for your first half marathon?
So the timeline was that I ran the 5K in March, and the half marathon I waited until after the wedding in December. So I got married like in August, and then that's when I was like, okay, you know, cut my hair, do the Mulan thing. Let's go hard on this. And I trained for 11 weeks planning up to the half marathon. And then when I did that race, I was so like focused and intent on making a certain time that like that one just went south at the end, and I ended up vomiting after the race. I have never done that since. And I learned that like don't be pushing yourself so hard. This is not, it's no longer about trying to hit a certain time. It's about finishing. Like this is a half marathon, not just any other race.
Yeah. So you had some pace goals going into the half marathon, it sounds like. Was that something that you had just kind of adopted for yourself? Like, I'm going to push myself to hit this goal. Okay, cool.
So it was like a personal thing. Even with the marathon, I think I wanted to finish within a certain time period as A goal, and then B goal was just survive.
Yeah. Which is an important goal for your first marathon for sure. cool. So you ran the half marathon, and you said that it you pushed yourself a little bit too hard. What was the experience like, if you could break down kind of race day for us for the first half marathon?
Well, it was in December, so it was very cold, colder than I remember. And then when you're running, I had that whole run walk strategy, and I took off way too fast and ran the first like 6 miles, and I'm like, no, that's not like me, because I was really set about sticking with the run walk. And then, you know, like at the end, you start burning out because you take off way too fast. And then And then like towards the end, I saw the 2:30 pacer. And this is what got me into being a pacer, because a year later, I would pace this half marathon as a 2:30. So it really stuck with me, those pacers. I was chasing them the whole way as soon as they passed me. And then as soon as I caught up to them around mile 8, they told me, well, congratulations, but you should be in front of us. Don't stick behind us. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, they really stuck with me. So then they're like, go, go. And I just ran my little heart out. And then once I crossed the finish line, it was like 2:29, something like that. And I was just so proud of myself. And then I threw up on the street. But anyway, I made sure to come back a year later and be that pacer that inspired me, that told me, go, you can do this.
That's really cool. That's really cool that you had that experience with pacing, and then you went back and did it at the exact same race for somebody else. That's a really full circle moment for sure. But I think that's a really common experience, that to come out pretty too fast on your first big race, and you know, the adrenaline's there, maybe the music's just hitting right, the spectators are there, and you just come out a little quick. But cool. So when did you decide from there to sign up for your first marathon?
Cool. Well, I had prior to actually doing that December marathon, the lottery and stuff was open for the Chicago Marathon in October. Yeah. So in October, I was like, if I'm going to do a marathon, let's do a world major, because I heard such wonderful things about it. So I signed up for the Chicago Marathon in October, and then I had a whole year to train for that, because it wasn't until October 2023. So then I was like, okay, let's sign up for a test marathon somewhere where I can have plenty of weeks. So I think I picked one that was 18 weeks out from my half marathon. So that way it can coincide with my training. That way, when I jumped off the half, I can still keep training for the marathon.
Yeah.
And so December to April 1st is that time period. And I made sure to have a huge block to just build up that mileage week over week.
Yeah. 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 That's good. How did you decide on a training plan? Was it something that you kind of put together yourself, or did you find something from the internet, or had a coach? Where'd you get it from?
So far, none of my marathons have been with a coach, just because I'm very cheap. So I always stick to like internet training plans.
Yeah.
And then with that, I mostly focused on like the weekend mileage, the very heavy one, trying to only go up 10% every week. And then I started joining a run group, because I was like, okay, we need to start running in the mornings, since it's like really hot and really cold in the afternoons. And then so during my marathon training, I joined my run group, Ohana Run Group, and I've been with them ever since, because they were very serious and very dedicated, and they taught me about like, oh, you should incorporate speed workouts. Oh, you should be doing hill workouts. Oh, when you get sweaty, don't forget to take salt. And it was all this stuff that I didn't know if I hadn't joined a run group when training for my marathon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I think that's a great resource for a lot of newer runners, is to join a run group of people who are also training for whatever goals that they have, but like you said, also have kind of a wealth of knowledge that they can pass on to you as a newer runner. How did you come across that run group?
Through Instagram. So I was very involved with the Run Irving series, which is like local to the Dallas area. Mm-hmm. And then they posted on Instagram, hey, we're meeting at 6 a.m. I was like, oh, I've always wanted to run at 6 a.m., but I'm too afraid. Like I was never going to run by myself. I always had my husband waiting in the car for me to run.
Sure.
So then meeting this new group, and they were all like very inspired individuals, and we're like, yeah, we've been training for this and that, and we're doing speed workouts. And I was like, oh my goodness. But I also found this group that was very pace inclusive. I'm like an 11, 12 minute pacer. I'm not trying to qualify for Boston or anything. So it was nice that they had like a mix of people who are like fast, slow, in between. And that way we have a saying, like, nobody gets left behind. So then also with the Run Irving series, I started posting social media content to put myself out there. And my friend who runs the page was like, hey, will you come be an ambassador for us and help promote the page too? So that's kind of interesting how it slowly opened doors with my first marathon and half marathon, that they were like, hey, come share your experiences with training for your first marathon of the Run Irving series. And I did the Irving Marathon.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And it's important to have runners like you who are maybe not, like you said, the Boston qualifiers, or are not going to be the ones winning the race necessarily. I also fall into that group. But it's important to have people like you who are ambassadors for races like this, so that more runners who, you know, are not out there worried about pace are coming out and racing.
We're the just trying to finish group.
Exactly. Yep. We have our own goals. We don't need to buy in. But yeah, that's awesome. So you became an ambassador. You started training for that marathon and running with this run group. So did you start to incorporate more speed and kind of interval and different types of training in since you joined that group?
I didn't know about the whole speed workouts, but I was still very set on that run walk thing that I will keep mentioning 100 times. Yeah. And so my new strategy was like run 9 or 10 minutes and then just walk one. And so I incorporated that to the marathon and I told my friends that that's what I was like doing. But also with them, I never knew that there was like that social conversation. So we would be talking during a run. And the next thing you know, I was running like 8 miles straight instead of just for 9 minutes. And I was sure. Like, whoa, I can't believe I did that. And then I noticed that I was getting faster with them because of they were doing the speed workouts with me. And so that was pretty interesting because it did come to play in my first marathon by having that community built of just people who are so supportive of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, let's dive into that. So how did that come to fruition once you got to marathon day?
Well, they told me to take salt and you're not supposed to take any on run day, but I did.
Yeah.
And so I guess, do you want me to talk about my first marathon experience?
Yeah. Go for it.
Okay. It was the most wild experience I've ever had. I was very hopey and hyped up, but anything that could go wrong did go wrong. So I had a goal of 5 hours. And of course, you know, you got to take off too fast. So I ended up PRing my half marathon at that time with like 2 hours, 20 minutes. And I was just like so excited. And so it was really hot that day because it's in April and Texas gets hot. And so my friends had told me to take salt and I didn't have a Garmin or anything. I was using a Fitbit as a timer back then. Uh-huh. So every 30 minutes I would take salt and every 45 minutes I would take like GU gels because I had been training with those. And so anyway, I got like a really nasty stomach cramp around mile 20 with taking too much salt. And then I just was like, oh my gosh, I hate this. But not only that, around mile 14, when I hit the wall, as we all hit the wall, that's when like your legs start crumping up and your body's like, oh man, why did you have salt too much every 30 minutes? I got lost on the race course. It was like the marathon and the half marathon were both starting together. And so there was 2,000 people running the race. But then when it came down to it, the half marathon finished since it was a double loop and there was only 400 people running the marathon. Mm. So like, imagine like the little dots of people just here and there. And we were along this water area. I didn't see the cones and I just froze. And I was like, do I go this way? Do I go that way? And there wasn't a lot of spectators, but thankfully someone saw me and I was dressed as a princess. I like to dress up for my races. And
yeah, they're like, cool.
Princess over here. It's this way. It's this way. I was like, oh my goodness. Thank you. So then we had to go over this bridge around mile 14 when I was like dying. And then there was this guy that was like, no, keep going. We're still during the race. I don't want to do this anymore. And then I remember just thinking like about my friends, like at mile 20, that, you know, that's the farthest you've ever gone in a marathon is like 20 miles in your training. And then I just remembered, oh, we do 6 miles at the park every single time that we would run our little community races. So I thought, okay, it's just another Wednesday run for me in the morning. So then at mile 20, something clicked into gear. And I guess that's where most people hit the wall at 20. And that's where I was like, it's just 6 more miles. So then I pushed myself and I just like kept somehow going. I was staring at the floor the whole time, gasping for air, but just like, keep going. And I finished like in 5 hours, 8 minutes. So not too far off my time, but I was pretty proud. And I also made a friend, if you want to hear about that.
Yeah, I would love to, for sure. Yeah.
So one of my friends who'd done a century bike ride said that I should make a friend with somebody who is going to run the marathon with me at the same pace. So as I was doing my little run walk, 9 minutes, 1 minute, I met this guy named Tyler. And Tyler was the most unique character I've ever met. And he would be like cheering on the crowd because the crowd is very quiet. And he'd be like, I have low self-esteem. Come give me support. And they'd be like, whoa, Tyler. And then, so I was like, hey, what's your name? He's like, I'm Tyler. And I go, oh, I remember. We should run the marathon together. And he's like, okay. So then like the first 3 miles, it was okay. Cause he'd be like, whoa, and the crowd would be like, whoa. But then like up to 9 miles, every time we would pass someone, I have low self-esteem, cheer for me. And I was like, okay, Tyler, I get it. You have low self-esteem.
So then
he was carrying like a backpack with him and I was having like my little water belt. It's like a flip belt thing where you carry your water bottle. So he was like shaking with his backpack. I was like, why did you do that? And he's like, I don't know. I just was not comfortable with not taking anything. And I go, oh, okay. So then sometime he fell apart and then I didn't see him again until I was on mile 23 and he was on mile 20. And then it was like a turnaround point where you pass each other like that. And then I just hear Amber. And I was like, Tyler. He's like, I'm dying. And I was like, Todd, you still have 6 more miles. I finished my race. And then later on, I saw that he did finish his marathon. So then it's pretty crazy because he wasn't going to run. He was like, after this, I'm done with marathons. No more. I'm one and done.
Yeah.
And then when I started doing the Run Irving ambassadorship, I was like, I'm going to be the 5:30 pacer for the Irving Marathon this next year. And then I was like, you should do it again. He was like, I don't know. Okay. But then he did sign up, and then I paced him as the 5:30 pacer a year later. So we made like a little lasting friendship from that one race.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's such a great story. So he was probably a great distraction. Like you said, he was all over the crowd, getting everybody hyped up. You need somebody like that on race day for sure. That's so great. So pacing has kind of been your full circle moment in a lot of ways. But for the actual marathon, where would you say your best miles were, where you were feeling the absolute best? And then where, like you said, where did you feel like you hit the wall or you struggled a little bit?
Well, definitely during the half marathon portion. So like miles 1 through 13, I was on it, and I had like the crowd support from Tyler hyping up the crowd. And then I just thought of my run group the whole time, and we're all together. And where I started falling apart is because it was 2 loops. And so once we had to cross the finish line and then come back in to redo it, the race, that's when like mentally you're just not here. And then like at the mile 14 is where I for reals like cramped up my legs, and I was like, why am I running a marathon? It was hot outside. And then I saw my husband, and he's like, 2 more hours. And I just started, I stopped running. And in the video I took, I'm like walking, and I was dying. And then 20 is when I kicked in. And then I had a very consistent end of the race somehow. Yeah. So definitely 14 through 20 was the hardest for me. And then after 20, something snapped, and it was like, it's just 10K.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I feel like that last 6 for a lot of people, like you said, your longest run a lot of times is the 20 mile run before you get into that marathon. So it's a lot of unknown. So it's cool that you were able to connect that back to a group run and say, no, this is just, I've done this before. We've ran here before. Everything's okay. And just kind of like center yourself, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned in the beginning that you took a lot of salt really early on. How did that impact your body and how you were feeling for the marathon?
So this was the first time that I had taken salt tablets like ever, because my run group was like, you should take it to prevent cramping. But they told me a week before the marathon, and I didn't know that you're not supposed to do anything new for race. So I was like, oh, my body's got it. My body can take gels. And taking it every 30 minutes was not helping. I guess that your GU gels already have some kind of like sodium in it.
Yeah.
And then also I wasn't doing like Gatorade. Nobody told me that I need to replenish my electrolytes or anything. And then the one time that I grabbed like water, I accidentally grabbed pickle juice, and it was really hot. So I was like throwing it all over myself, and I threw pickle juice on my face.
Oh my gosh. Did it burn?
Like, you're already sweating salt, and then it was more salt all over my face.
Oh my gosh. So you hit kind of every obstacle in the book for for your first marathon experience. But it sounds like you like you said, you ended up pretty close to your goal. So what do you think kept you focused the whole time and really pushing through all of the obstacles that you faced for the whole thing?
Boy, it was just like I want to get through this because I had the Chicago coming up, and this was my determination that if I can do this, I can do anything. So then just that mental state of we're doing this for a greater goal in mind. And then I didn't know that that was going to be like the first of many marathons that I would do. I thought this was like the first one and done as well, like Tyler.
You did. So you went into it thinking like, this is all I've got. I'm just going to do one, meet this personal goal. And then we'll hang up the shoes from there.
The real one. Yes.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting. That I feel like that's how a lot of people feel. But like we said in the beginning, you do kind of get the bug, short-term memory loss with marathon running for sure.
You forget the pain that you felt during the race. And then after the race, I slept for 3 days straight.
It
was terrible. My husband had to physically carry me from the car to the bed because I couldn't walk. And I remember sleeping for 14 hours and then waking up to eat and then going straight to bed again.
Yeah, that's very relatable. Very first one, especially. Especially, you said it was hot, right? So especially if it was hot, that could take a lot more out of you, I would imagine, for race day. But Cool. So, wow, quite the day, quite the day. When you already had Chicago on the calendar. So normally my next question is, when did you think about signing up for your second one? But you had already had your second one on the calendar when you ran your first one. So what do you feel like you learned from the first time around training for your first marathon that you then maybe changed or adjusted in for your second marathon?
Well, definitely the whole electrolyte salt thing. I invested and got myself an actual running watch that was going to help me with pace. Yeah. So they told me that the signal in Chicago was spotty. And so what I did was I had like a pace band around me that would tell me what time I should be at what mile. So I focused with the pace band instead because I really wanted to hit that 5-hour goal this time. And then with my watch, I set it to auto lock, which I would use as a pacer later on. So I would mark it, like I would see the lap that said like mile one, and I would like click my watch to auto lap it to manual. Gotcha. So with that, I started focusing more on like pacing with my run since I really had that 5-hour goal in mind. And then also I stuck to the group runs because I had a really nice like community that was very supportive of me. And so with Chicago being in October, it was a lot easier to start training with the fall weather. I guess like training in the summer was really hard, but then once it got to August and September, things got a lot easier. And then the Chicago weather was perfect. It was 50 degrees and there's like 40,000 runners. So having come from the Irving Marathon where there was 400 runners to Chicago with 40,000, the atmosphere was just so different. And because I already knew in mind that I had that distance, I could do it. It gave me that confidence boost that Chicago was going to be like, not a breeze, but a lot better because I know I've done this before. I can do it again.
Yeah. You felt more prepared going into it. And that's something I think for the first marathon that is really interesting is you have to go into it blind and just kind of do it to kind of work out the kinks and figure out what's working for you and what's not working for you. And like you proved, every marathon's a little bit different. So there's a little bit of flexibility that you have to have because nothing's going to go exactly as you plan it. But for your second time around through training, did you do a 20-mile run as well for like as your final long run before you started tapering and all of that?
I did. So when I was training for it back in, I guess, last August, because it was in October, I caught COVID in August. So that completely shot my whole summer training that I was doing.
Oh my gosh.
And so I only had the month of September because it was like the first week off of October. And I was doing half marathons very actively. So I never stopped running after my first marathon. I tried to keep at least that steady base. Right. And then in September, nobody else was training for a fall race for whatever reason, except for one friend who was doing like a 50 miler. So me and him would wake up like at 6 a.m. And in Dallas, we have this beautiful lake that's a 9-mile loop. So we would go loop it multiple times during the training session. So I did do the 18 1 week and then the week after 20. And then I tapered for 2 weeks for that. But it was a lot better on my body and better mentally because like the first time I ran 20 miles, I was like, I can't believe it. I'm so tired. I want to throw up. And the second time you do that 20-mile run, it's like, okay, I can do this. I've done this before. My legs will recover hopefully after a nice rest.
Yeah. You have a little bit more confidence. Yeah.
And it helped with the consistency without stopping. It just keep having steady runs throughout the summer, like not stopping altogether.
Sure. Yeah. Because as soon as you stop, you got to start all the way over. Nobody wants to do that. Exactly. So that a question I get asked pretty often is about taper periods and kind of the strategy for taper periods. So did you do like a 3-week taper, 2-week, 1 week? What was the strategy for both marathons in terms of a taper?
In both, I did a 2-week taper. So after I hit the 20, I did like 15. And then they say no more than 10 miles. So normally I always had a race that weekend. So I did like a 10K, which is 6 miles, and then just 4 miles on the side. So nothing crazy and not trying to PR during that taper week, even though you might be tempted to during a 10K. Don't try and PR.
Yeah. Definitely important to take it easy during that time. Give your body a chance to rest so that you're 100% going into race day. Totally. What about nutrition? Were you doing anything specific for nutrition the week leading up to your second marathon, like a carb load or anything like that?
Oh yes. The whole of Chicago, I was eating pasta like every single Friday and then running heavy miles on Saturday. And so with leading up to the marathon, with like the actual marathon, 3 days before, I would make sure to carb load and then drink like a whole bottle of water, like something like this.
Yeah.
And then drink your electrolytes because you're going to be sweating a lot. So I really pushed with the Gatorade at least like 3 days before. And then because the week of Chicago, I was really nervous the morning of, and you know, like I train with eating like bagels or peanut butter jelly sandwiches, but then the morning of the race, I was just so nervous and like shaking. I ate like 2 bites of my bagel. It's like, I said, I can't stomach it. But because I had that 3 days of eating straight pasta, I at least had food in my stomach, and that didn't make me nauseous during my run. So
yeah,
I guess in terms of training, make sure that you're eating like a hearty dinner prior. And then in the morning, my personal rule is if I'm going to be doing more than 10 miles, I eat like a very heavy, not heavy breakfast, but like either oatmeal or a bagel or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich the morning of, like at least 2 hours before. If I'm doing anything less than 10 miles, I just do like an applesauce or a granola bar.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to look at it. That makes it easy. If you're going to 10 plus, you got to do a little bit more, have a little bit more sustenance in you. 10 and anything less than 10, you can maybe take it a little easier. But yeah, it's all personal preference. So I would also say just trial and error. That's what your training runs are for. So it's a good time to test things out for sure. Mm-hmm. Cool. So you said that I want to talk about Chicago because I love talking about world majors. So you said the night before you were feeling pretty nervous. How did you feel on race morning?
Oh, race morning, I was doing it with a charity, so we had a breakfast together. And normally I had been training with bagels and peanut butter and jelly up to this point, so they had a little bagel bar, and I just was like not able to eat. I had 2 bites of my bagel, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I was surrounded by people too who were also in that charity because I was running for St. Jude, and they were just talking about, oh, this is my 20th marathon. No, we're just here. And I was like, okay. So then we all walked to the race together. And then I had my one friend from Dallas who was running the Chicago Marathon with me. And he was very nervous. Like, he was shaking more nervous than me. And something clicked. And I was like, oh, you know, you're nervous. I don't have to be nervous because you'll be nervous for me. So then I talked to him and I calmed him down and was like, hey, you've done a marathon before. All the things that I wish I could have told myself.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
I was like, you've done this before. This is just a walk in the park. It's like a run with friends. You got this. And then he was like, okay, you sure? Yeah, you're going to be fine. And somehow pep talking him calmed me down. And then I had that 5-hour goal during Chicago, and it was just way different, the environment, than my first marathon where there were like so little crowd support. Chicago had people cheering the entire way. And I saw my family like multiple times on the course where they were like cheering me on. And then there was like something about Chicago where I was very set on the 5-hour PR, and I told myself it's P or PR. So I went straight, and I don't know. It just felt so much different having everybody cheer your name. And I wrote my name on my shirt, so they'd be like, "Oh, I'm the woo!" Like complete strangers. And that gave me like an ego boost. And I was like, I can do this. I hardly listened to music because people were partying the whole way. It was like a giant celebration. And then that caused me not to stop. Like, there wasn't a wall on this one. I just felt mentally good and very like happy. And I had 3 days of pasta on me, not nauseous at all.
That helps. Yeah.
So I ended up finishing 3 minutes before the 5-hour mark. And I was like, so, so very proud of that.
Nice. That's great. So I'm sure the environment is just insane. You probably can't even have headphones at that point. You just want to absorb all of the energy that's around you, right?
Mm-hmm. If you can do a world major, I definitely recommend them. They're so much fun and so much energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Chicago the only world major you've ran so far?
Yes.
What's like your bucket list world major, would you say?
I don't know. I guess I was trying to do New York, but then like I saw that it's really hard to get in with the lottery, and I was very like being dead set on Chicago. Like my life is complete. It may be like 10 years from now before I really get serious about the world majors, but I'd like to do New York.
Yeah, that would be really cool. So for Chicago, You said that you ran it with a charity. I know that's something that a lot of people are also interested in. Do you mind just kind of talking about how you got involved with the charity, what the application process was like, what training with them was like, all of that?
So with the World Majors, there are like three ways to get in. There's the charity, there's you being really fast, or there's the lottery system. So I didn't make the lottery, but I knew I was dead set on having Chicago as my official marathon because like, it's just so big. So then with that, I looked up a list of charities that support Chicago Marathon through their website. And then one of them happened to be St. Jude. So because after it was a lottery deadline, the little price went up to raise by like $200. So in total, I had to raise $1,750. But if you think about it, you're raising that for a good cause, and then it's over a year that you have. So then you have, or I had the whole year to raise the money for the charity. And so I was really passionate about St. Jude because it's a great cause that they're trying to end cancer within children. And then not only that, but they had support throughout. Like they gave me a team jersey that said St. Jude Hero. And then during the race day weekend, they had support for you during the Chicago Marathon, which if you're doing it by yourself, you don't really have that. So like, like on the weekend, they had an event for Pasta where they had like a tent that we could join. And then in the morning of the race, they provided like the bagels for us and said that we were welcome to come back to them for lunch. So there were perks with running with the charity other than you just like raising money for it. They kind of gave back to you as well with that support system.
Yeah, that's great. And I especially for newer runners, like you said, or solo runners that maybe don't have anybody to go to these World Majors with, I think that's a really cool option to just have a little bit more of a community around you if you're doing it on your own. So that's great. So I guess kind of same question as I asked for the first marathon. Where did you feel like you felt the best during the Chicago Marathon? And where did you feel like maybe you were feeling a little bit like, oof, this is really 26 miles, isn't it?
Well, it was so much different because again, that crowd support and the environments and everyone was just partying the whole way. I did not hit any kind of wall like the first marathon.
That's fantastic.
And it was during mile 24, I only had 2 more miles. And that's when I was like, why am I here? Why am I running this? it was just so much different. And I think the success of Chicago caused me to sign up for an ultra and then like another marathon after that, because I just felt amazing. And then even hours after Chicago, I was just like alive and like, let's go celebrate. And my body was feeling great. But also unlike the Irving Marathon, where I had only been training for a couple weeks, by Chicago came around, I had a whole year of running under my belt. So I had like my muscles were able to adapt. And after the marathon, like I wasn't passed out for 3 days after Chicago. I felt like I slept for a couple hours and then let's go eat dinner. I'm really hungry. Kind
of. Yeah. That's great. So what do you think was the big difference between the two besides just like having a better base? Was there anything fuel related that you did differently, or any pre-race stuff that you did differently?
Definitely investing in the watch really helped me, because before with a Fitbit, just using it as a timer saying every 45 minutes do my gel. Like here, I know that some people don't focus on pace, but it was keeping me in touch like, hey, you're going too fast, or this isn't a speed workout. And then also my watch told me like my heart rate, for example, saying that you're overworking yourself. Whereas my Fitbit, which I was only using it for a clock, was not really helping. So investing in some kind of running watch. And then I went to a shoe store and asked my friend who worked there, what shoes can I get? So one big difference between Irving and Chicago was that I went to like a Fleet Feet, for example. They scan your foot and they said, your ankles are small. You need something with cushion around it. And since you're doing a lot of heavy miles, get something with a lot of padding at the bottom of it. So then I bought a shoe that I love so much after Chicago that I just bought it again once they had used their mileage already.
Yeah.
And then also I learned from the electrolyte salt situation. I started taking salt every 1 hour instead of every 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then with the whole Gatorade situation, my first marathon, I was not using any electrolytes whatsoever. And I think that's why I got the cramp. So at Chicago, they had aid stations with water and Gatorade at every mile marker. So at every mile, I had my personal water bottle on the side, but I would take like a little cup of Gatorade every other mile and then water at every stop, even though I knew that I might not need it. So I double hydrated compared to when I was in Irving, only hydrating when I was like thirsty. I made sure that I was like getting those electrolytes in.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of changes from the first to the second, but it obviously it paid off, like not just in your time. I know you hit your goal, of course, but you were able to recover so quickly. So they clearly all the adjustments you made paid off.
Yeah. It was way more of a success.
Yeah. And like you said, you just feel much better about it. Like, man, I feel strong after this. It didn't just take 110% out of me. I can actually like function as a person after this thing, which is obviously a good feeling. Cool. So then from there, you said you decided to sign up for an ultra. Where did that dream come from after Chicago?
So Chicago was supposed to be the last marathon that I ever did.
Famous last words.
Yes. But my run group was training. They were training for an ultra on the trail, like in November. So Chicago was in October. And I was like, well, I'm still going to have that base from Chicago. So to make that long story short, I DNF'd the 50K and I stopped at mile 20 because it was on the trail, and trail running is so much more different than marathon street running. And then from that, I was like, no, I can do this. I know I can do this. So I gave myself time and signed up for an ultra in February. I did the Cowtown Ultra, which is on the street instead of the trail. And so with Cowtown, that was like 3 months ago. And with that experience, it's like you've already done a marathon, so it's just six more past the marathon. So the same mentality of once you hit that 20, it's just a 10K. Once you hit that 26, it's just another 10K.
Right.
But the Cowtown Ultra was rough because it was really hot outside. And even though I had like my, I think I did a flip belt. That's another thing you want to learn is how are you going to carry your water? Because it's important when you carry your water, especially in Texas, it's really hot. I would carry my stuff in a belt versus a vest. And when I paced the Irving Marathon back in March 30th, I did a running vest, and that worked a lot better because you have more water to carry on your back in case the aid stations run out. Like during the Irving Marathon, this last recent time, they ran out of water and we were rinsing cups off the floor. Like they ran out of little cups and it was just too hot outside.
Right. Yeah, that I'm glad that you said that. I made this point on a previous episode a couple of episodes ago, but I like that there's a couple of you runners that are coming on and talking about wearing a vest, because that for some reason was a stigma when I ran my first marathon about like, oh, I don't want to look like I you know, like the elite runners that are looking to win the whole thing. They're not wearing their vests, but there's some stigma around it for people who are more kind of in the average to the back of the pack. But I agree with you. I think having it on your back, especially if you live in a hotter climate, it gives you a little bit more control and it doesn't force you to rely on the aid stations. That's pretty wild that they ran out of water. You'd think that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, and then like cups during the marathon. Probably because people were taking it too many. But since during the Irving Marathon, I was the 5:30 pacer, we were like way in the back. I think there was like an 8-hour cutoff time. And by then, like all the fast people have finished and we're the people who are just like, come on, let's do this together. Let's go. Yeah. Let's get done.
Yeah. So you said that you attempted an ultra marathon right after and it didn't quite go the way that you wanted to. What do you feel like happened on that race day? You said it was a trail, right? So different than what you were used to, but what do you think happened on that one?
Oh, I got nauseous really bad. So I remember mentioning that I threw up after my first half marathon.
Yeah.
And I haven't done it since. Well, I threw up during my ultra. So during the ultra and the trail running, you really need that water because you're going a very far distance and there's not a lot of aid stations. You're like in the forest by yourselves. And so we attempted this thing as a group called Dino Valley, which is like 2 hours from Dallas. And to me, it was like a really rough course. On the trail, we were like hiking up and down mountains like this. And so they had little loops of 10. So after the first loop of 10, I felt great. But then you're also fueling differently. So like during my marathon, I was eating gels. But during trail races, you have to be eating actual food because you're on your feet for a longer tour time.
Sure.
So I had like an orange and a cookie and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, stuff that I would never eat like during my run. But I was like, no, because I need to be eating because it's already been 5 hours since I've been on my feet and I'm still not done with the 50K, which is 31 miles. And so we were doing a particularly steep climb up like a mountain. And then I just felt so nauseous. I wasn't eating my gels because it hurt. I wasn't drinking water anymore. And then I cracked that mile 20 and I told my friend, like, I can't do this anymore. You can't make me go out there another 10 miles. We've been running for 6 hours and we still have 10 more miles for me to finish trail ultra. So then that's when I called it for myself and I made the decision that I'm not going to put myself through another 10 miles. You know, I'll live to see another day. And I did live to see another day. I signed up for a road ultra, which went a lot better personally.
Yeah. Trail running is not for the weak. Like, it is not. I haven't ran a marathon distance or an ultra distance for a trail run, but I did run a half marathon. And I still think that that half marathon on the trail was harder than my full marathon on the pavement. It's like, it's an absolute different beast. And 6 hours to run 20 miles, it's just a long time to be on your feet too, that you're maybe not used to if you've been running on the pavement. So that makes total sense to me that you would not be feeling so hot, you know.
But especially I'm so proud of, like, the rest of my members in my run group did finish within like 9 and 10 hours. So I was like, yeah, super proud of them. But with me, I was like, I can do another ultra another day.
Yeah, that's a great mindset to have. So what ended up being so successful about the next one? You obviously, it was on the pavement, so I'm sure that helped, but what led to the success on your ultra marathon?
So with this one, I had a friend with me. I have a friend named Josh. He's crazy. He did this thing 26 miles for 26 days. He just finished this last one. So I had a great friend who was like super into running marathons, and because I had paced him during his first 100K, he was like, let me pace you the whole time during your ultra marathon. So during my ultra, it was really hot. And I had learned from a trail run that when I start to feel nauseous, I took these things called ginger chews, which are like candy. It's hard candy that you suck. And that helped with my nausea. So when I felt like throwing up, like at mile 12, for example, where I started falling apart during the ultra, I took a ginger chew and it helped a lot better. But really, running with my friend made a huge difference than just running by myself, because like the previous, or like the Irving Marathon, for example, you have the half starting with the full, and then in the Cowtown that I ran, it was the half with the ultra and the marathoners. And then once the marathoners break off from the ultra marathoners, there's only like the handful of people who are really like challenging themselves and pushing themselves.
Sure.
So I remember I hit the marathon mark and like miles 19 through 24 were the ultra split, and it was in complete sunlight and it was like 75 degrees outside and I was dying. And at mile 26, when we hit the marathon, my friend was like, we just did a marathon. And in my video, I was like, oh. And then he was like a mile 27, I stopped eating my gels because that nausea was just really getting to me. But I had been hydrating and taking my electrolytes the whole time. And he was like, you're just three more miles. The finish line is like right there. You don't need to be eating anymore if you feel like it's upsetting your stomach, because you had already built up hours prior. So I was like, okay. And then hold on, 29, 30, 31, 20, at mile 28, he got me to just run the straight, the last 3 miles without stopping during the ultra. And we started passing people up who were like really exhausted. And that's because we were just trying to push myself to get through. But this whole time, my friend was just a cheerleader. He was like cheering at the crowds. My friend is running her first ultra. And then we'd be like, woo! Like crowd support from Chicago, like it reminded me of that. So I had that crowd support going on with my friend just being my cheerleader. And he lost his voice at the end of the race.
That's a good friend. Yeah, that seems to be a theme with you, is that you have a good support team around you, and you have friends that'll be your hype man and really get you through the thing. I think that's really important, especially for early on, or I mean any point in your running group,
having
especially
that,
early on.
That run group that I joined my first marathon, and then throughout we just built that closer friendship, or now I have people running the race with me. It really really helped me.
That's awesome. I love that a lot. So I want to talk about your pacing experience too, since I think that's something that's pretty unique to have.
Pacing the Irving Marathon after that was my very first marathon was a very like surreal experience for me, because the cycle just went in full circle with being.
Sure.
And so with being a pacer, I picked a time that I could be comfortable running. So my marathon PR was 4 hours and 50 something minutes. So I picked the 5-hour 30 time because I knew that, okay, I've been on my feet for 5 hours and 30 minutes on the trails. So I know what that's like. And my PR is at the 5-hour mark. If I fall apart, I still have like 30 minutes. So with that, you're holding up the little sticks that say 5-hour, whatever time. And I made changes that I've learned from my past marathons to be the pacer. Instead of that running belt that I carried for my ultra with just a water bottle, I said, it's hot. During Cowtown, my problem was I ran out of water too quickly. So I carried that running vest that I had with like 1.5 liters of water on my back at all times. And then I made sure to take my salt, learning to do it every hour instead of every 30 minutes. And then I had my gels. So with the pacing strategy, it's like a 12-minute, 30-minute pace for the 5-hour 30 mark. And so we had the strategy that we were going to run with our group very like slowly at that 12-minute pace, very consistently. We ran the whole half marathon without stopping. So we were walking at water stations, and I had my little group. And immediately I told my group, hey, if you're feeling good, go ahead of me. And if we catch up to you, then we'll let you know. But like, try and stay ahead of us as much as you can, because we'll always be there. We'll always be there at the consistent time. Yeah. So then after the half marathon, we had about like 2 minutes of time saved up. And it's important as a pacer to kind of have a little block in case you need to like go to the restroom, or you're having like leg cramps during the race. With that, I had a pacing buddy, and she wasn't carrying a water bottle with her. And so she was only using the aid station water bottles. And as I've mentioned previously, they ran out of water at one of the aid stations, and they also ran out of cups. So we were rinsing our cups. So my poor pacing buddy accidentally grabbed pickle juice, and she immediately was like, this is horrible. And
oh my gosh, that she seems didn't to be a thing water. With Irving. They need to label your cups for pickle juice.
they had two separate tables. It's kind of like during Chicago, they had Gatorade first and then water. So here they had water first and then pickle juice. And she grabbed the pickle juice. But I learned from Noah, and I was like, don't dump pickle juice on your face. I'm sure it helps some people with cramping, but it's not for me.
Sure.
So anyway, my pacing partner fell apart at mile 14, and we started doing a run walk method, where back in my first marathon I was run walking as well. But here we were running for 1 minute and then walking for 30 seconds. And so when she just got really hot, because it was hot, and a lot of the pacers actually dropped out that I found them later after the race because of the heat. And so she gave me her stick, and she was like, I'll try and catch up with you, but if I can't, keep going. So I felt really strong, mostly because I had like a whole lot of water on my back. I was taking my gels consistently. My body felt great because I just did it ultra the month before. So like that month in between the pacing, I didn't do a lot of heavy running because my body already had like the ultra marathon built up to it.
Sure.
Yep. So then with the run walk, we needed to build up the time because we had lost our time and we were falling behind the 5-hour 30-minute mark. And I had that pace band with me. So then with the run walk, I started to run a little faster, and to keep that 12-minute 30-second, I would run like a 10-minute pace pretty quickly. And then I would have that 30 seconds where I absolutely was like slow turtle walking. Then I started to build up a group like at mile 20 who were following me, and they were like, how close are you to your time? And I would be like, oh, I'm 2 minutes off of my time or ahead of my time. You're good. So it was really great for them, because then they would run walk with me. And then towards the end, I had that little like one and a half minute bubble where I was just walking the last end of the race because I was so much ahead of my time. And I checked my watch and the pace band, and that was just like the greatest feeling, because I would see people would look at my sign and be like, is that the time? And be like, yeah, you can do it. I'm 2 minutes ahead. Go. And then sprint to the finish line. So being a pacer for the Irving Marathon was like the most rewarding thing I've ever done. And I'm glad that is like my last marathon that I'm doing for a while. I'm taking a break from marathons right now.
Sure.
4 in 1 year is a little too much.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's insane. I mean, I'm thinking about doing 3 this year. So I'm like obviously comparing myself, but 3 is a lot for me. So 4 plus pacing for the first time, like all the kudos to you. That's amazing. what do you feel like you learned being a pacer versus just being, you know, a runner on the course?
there's a lot more pressure, I feel like, being a pacer, because you have other people relying on you to keep that right. time. You're like a human clock.
Yeah.
And then with that, it's better, or it's good that I did marathons prior, because now I know I've done a marathon. This isn't the first time that I do it. And then that pressure of I can't fall apart. People are needing me. Versus also, I'm not trying to PR. I picked a time where I knew that I would be comfortable running. And even if I fell apart, I could still finish the race in 5 hours, 30 minutes. Because yeah. during the ultra, even I finished the marathon like in 5 hours, 10 minutes, that marathon portion. So there wasn't that pressure to PR. Like, everyone always has a goal time. It was like, you are the goal time.
Yeah.
So, but it went really well being a pacer.
Yeah, that is a lot of pressure, though, to have people relying on you. But like you said, I'm sure it was just an incredibly rewarding experience to have people that were depending on you and that you got to support them through potentially their first marathon, which is really cool and really full circle.
Oh, yeah, and then my friend Tyler, who ran the first marathon with me, he came back and he PR'd during that marathon.
That's amazing.
It was so rewarding.
Yeah, that's amazing. Amazing. I love that. Cool. So, what would you say, like, if somebody was thinking about running their first marathon, what advice would you give somebody like that based on your experience?
It's pretty cool to follow the pacers, because we are here to help you reach your goal. So try and pick a pace that you're comfortable with, and also have an ABC goal. Have like, okay, I want to finish in 5 hours. What happens if you don't? Don't beat yourself up. You finish in 5 hours, 30. And then what happens if you don't after that? Your goal is just to finish, you know. And then just because you're running super fast during your race, it's always different on race day. So try to have like a strategy. And then I can't say enough about the whole run walking thing. It really works out for me, with either running 1 minute and then walking 30 seconds. Or like my first marathon, I ran 9 minutes and then walked 1 minute.
Yeah, I think that's great advice for sure. The run walk strategy is it's I feel like pretty well known, but I think more people definitely in the beginning could adopt it for sure, especially to build a good base. So yeah, I like that a lot. This is something I'll give kind of the disclaimer I always give, that running each journey is very individual. Do a lot of trial and error, but for you, what was your go-to gel that you really liked, or fuel that you really liked throughout your training?
I had three. I was using this gel called UCAN primarily, because it lasts for an hour to an hour and 15 minutes. But they changed their recipe back in January and it started upsetting my stomach.
Mm.
So be careful again with the trial and error. And then my secondary go-to gel is Huma, because it has like, it's very natural. I think it's like chia seeds or something.
Yeah.
So they have like whole flavors like raspberry. And then my third alternative, if I'm absolutely desperate, is GU, because I took GU during my first marathon. I had been training for it. I spit it out all over myself. So, and then what else? At some points during my trail run, I have actually eaten like trail mix. That's helpful. If they have orange slices during the race, I don't mind like eating an orange slice, because it's really refreshing.
Yeah.
And then with the Gatorades, just be careful. Don't buy like the straight Gatorade bottles. Buy like Gatorade powder. So I use like the liquid IV, or like the rapid rehydration for Gatorade powder, into a small water bottle, and I just take sips throughout, because you do need to be replenishing those electrolytes somehow during your race.
Yeah. Cool. And then for shoes. So you said that you're between your first marathon and second, you switched up your shoes, and that helped a lot. What shoes have been your favorite throughout? What are you currently using? What are your favorites for shoes?
So I like the Brooks Glycerin, because they have a lot of cushion at the very bottom of it. And at the shoe store, they told me that my ankles are really tiny, and so I needed padding around it. So I got shoes that were purposely going to be comfortable to last 5 hours the whole race for me, because before I was just focused on like speed. There's no need for me to be wearing like a carbon fiber or fast foot if I'm going to be on the course for like 5 to 6 hours.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Glycerins too. Those are definitely my favorite. Have you been a Brooks girl throughout training? All of your shoes have been Brooks so far?
No, actually, when I'm trying to do speed work, I use Saucony, because has this little thing in the front where you run and then you can push off like that front.
Yeah.
So when I'm trying to PR my 5K time, or a 10K time, I do Saucony. But when I'm like doing a comfortable every day or like a 20 mile run, I do the Brooks because they're just comfortable to ride.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And then last couple questions, honestly, are just what's coming up next for you? I know you said you're taking a break from marathons. Is there anything that you're currently training for right now?
Actually, no. No, I really don't take it. Yeah, because the whole last year cycle with me running 3 marathons, an ultra and an ultra attempt, like I felt like my body just needs a break. So I'm still running very consistently to try and keep a base up. But so far, I haven't signed up for anything. It's weird. So now I'm just running for fun and preaching to others that it's okay to run for fun as well. You don't always have to be training. And then it's pretty ironic because I posted a video about myself, like about like, oh, I'm not trying to PR. I PR'd my 5K like 2 days after I posted that video. just because I was like, I felt good. My body feels good after the ultra and I still want to keep that up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as long as you're like, I don't think it's so black and white, or it doesn't have to be so black and white with like I'm training for something or I'm not training for something. Like you said, if you have a good base, you can just kind of sign up for whatever race seems fun at the time. So
the thing is, like, I love running so much. Like it's so freeing. For example, the opportunities that I get. I once paced my friend 20 miles on his 100 miler, and I remember I was running with him at 3 a.m. in the middle of the forest, and like you're just staring at the stars, at the sky, because there's no lights in the middle of the woods. And just that's so surreal to be with my friend at 4 a.m, 3 a.m, running trails with him. Or like we ran the skyline, for example, at 8 p.m. with all the lights flickering on. And that's just stuff that like running gives you that feeling. We also ran a Strava map that was like the shape of Texas. So fun things like that outside of racing that you just get to like live life as a runner. That's so
exciting. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, you finding a purpose beyond just the race day. I think that's pretty cool. Awesome. Well, last question for you is just, where can we find you? Where can we follow along with you and see what you have going on?
Yeah, my Instagram is simply_Amberina. So perfect. Even though my name is Amber, my husband calls me Amberina. So that's my whole profile.
Love that. Cool. And I'll put it in the show notes too, so people can follow you. But
thanks. I make a lot of like silly content mostly.
I love your content. Yeah. I love that. I saw one that you posted recently that was talking about like, oh, I'm never going to sign up for another marathon. And then you immediately signed up for one. Hilarious. Super relatable.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. And I appreciate you coming on and telling your story today. You've had quite the last year running. It's been fun kind of hearing about your journey along the way, everything that you've learned. And I'm looking forward to seeing what cool stuff is coming up next for you. So thank you again for coming on and talking to me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Yay. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, appreciate it. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.